This episode of the Commerce Marketer Podcast is brought to you by Bronto Software, the leading email provider to the global internet retailer 1000. For more ideas on how to improve your marketing automation and to take your email to the next level, visit www.bronto.com/resources. Brands today are trying to find ways to differentiate themselves, attract new customers, and use marketing channels like email and social to grow their business. In today's world, it's not only not easy, it's hard. So how did one canvas hour company manage to rise through the noise, use social and email to not only stay relevant, but grow their business, ultimately leading to a partnership with Gary Vee? Welcome to the Commerce Marketer Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Zakowitz, and today we're going to talk all about modern day marketing, like email, social, and content, and accelerating your business. Joining me to share his knowledge, I welcome to the show Mark Brazil, the co-founder of the brand Iconic. Welcome to the show, Mark. Thanks for being here.
Greg, thank you, my man. That was a nice intro. Appreciate it.
I wrote it myself.
Hey.
How can you go wrong?
Love it. There you go.
Mark, before we get into it today, why don't you give us a little background about who Iconic is, and then as a follow-up to that, kind of who your main customer is.
Cool. Yeah. So to simplify it as much as possible is we are affordable art. So it's from $90 to $750, really built for the masses, mostly revolved around motivation, inspiration, photography, and pop culture. We have a bunch of licenses like Marilyn Monroe, Muhammad Ali, the NBA. Right now, we are 100% all e-commerce, and we aggressively spend on paid marketing online. But that's the general thesis.
And then, what's your typical customer look like? Do you have a general age range or gender skewing or anything like that?
Yeah. So the company, from a full time standpoint, we've been in business under 2 years. Things escalated pretty quickly for us. And to be completely transparent, you know, right now we're really discovering our customer profile. How it started was Jeff, my business partner, who's the designer, and then I do the business. We really just was putting out stuff that was authentic to our lifestyle and whatever organically was integrated into our life. So we were really, our customer by default ultimately was us. And, you know, Jeff's 30, I'm 33. So it's really, I would say the 16 to 42 year old male that's passionate about entrepreneurship, learning, getting better. And, you know, the metrics by default reflect that. A large majority of our bestsellers are all revolved around motivation and entrepreneurship. So I would say it's me. That our customer is people like me, people like you, the younger version of you and the younger version of me. And we have slowly peeled in, I'd probably say about 10 to 15% of our SKUs are female heavy. And we started seeing females buy for their significant other or for their son. So we're starting to loop them in and give them SKUs specific for them. So predominantly me, but we're bringing in some females as well.
Do you get any sense that you get a rise in female purchasing? I know you mentioned female purchasing because they're buying for significant others or children, but do you get a rise with the number of female entrepreneurs that are seemingly increasing and female, I even say engineers, right? Coding engineers that are coming up and having a more entrepreneurial standpoint. Have you been able to see any rise of that, or is it just too early to tell?
We have seen that. And I think we're really lucky that, you know, 20 years ago when you said you were an entrepreneur, you know, you were looked at as a loser. And, you know, the cool thing was the guy that, you know, that worked on Wall Street and was a finance guy. But now since it's trending so hard, I think you're starting to see more female entrepreneurs come into the fray. And we've actually done multiple collections with female entrepreneurs. And what was very interesting about that is both did very well, but from a call to action, from a social proofing and people posting on social media, we found there was more posts by women supporting those collections than any other collection outside of Gary Vee, because the female entrepreneur, you know, pocket, although it's not as big as males, they're very tight knit, and it's almost like an us against them mentality, and they're very proud to rep being an entrepreneur. So we've definitely targeted that mini pocket through paid marketing, and we've seen great success there.
Oh, that's very cool. I was going to ask you how you got on the canvas art, but I think we can probably back our way into that because you mentioned your business partner, Jeff, who is a designer. You're the business guy. Maybe I am going to ask this after all. So you said you were putting out content that kind of resembled the two of you. How did you get in the canvas art, right? So if you meet Jeff, and when you're putting out content, what's the purpose of that content that you're putting out at that particular time?
Yeah. So two questions. First is like, how did it really like start? So basically I found 4 or 5 years ago, a kid when I was touring the US in Boston, a random kid that had a cool drawing in a streetwear shop. I met him. He did some 1099 contract work for me. Long story short, I gave a piece of the art to Rob Kardashian, who posted it on Instagram, and I ended up selling a piece of art for $1,000. This was 4 or 5 years ago. You fast forward to now, that artist sells pieces to Kevin Hart, Meghan Trainor, Snoop Dogg. His pieces are 15, 20 grand. And I realized that everybody that was emailing me to buy the art couldn't afford the art. So then I dropped a limited time print, not a limited unit print to not limit the upside for revenue. We made 20 grand in 2 days. And immediately I was like, wow, there's a huge hole in the price point art market. And then I saw the hole in the price point art market. And then Jeff, my business partner, who's a designer, was starting to grow on Instagram. And he's like, wow, what is on Instagram? And he likened it to motivational quotes, photography, and then meme culture. So then we just started drop shipping art. And long story short, in 2017, we moved from Squarespace to Shopify in February. And then in March of 2017, we did paid ads and we got off running real quick. It went well quick. We found some white space and then we sprinted for 13 months in a row with increasing revenue. So that's how it started. And then what was the specific question you asked with content? What are we looking for when we make content? Was that the question?
Yeah. So when you said you were publishing, you guys were putting content out there, but it really wasn't a business model yet. I was just curious about like, what was the purpose of putting content out in the space? Was it just to kind of get a feel for things? Was it, hey, we're going to start a business. Let's throw stuff out there to see what sticks. Or was it just kind of a side passion of yours?
It was a complete side passion. We had another job. We were working with this from 5 to 8 in the morning and from 6 o'clock to late. It was really a creative outlet where, I mean, literally, like it would be 10 o'clock. We'd be done processing orders. Me and Jeff, we have a live work. So we were, you know, we'd be sitting on the beanbags. We'd be watching The Social Network. And then Justin Timberlake, Sean Parker would make the line, you know, $1 million isn't cool. You know what it is? A billion. And then we'd be like, oh, that's a cool idea for a piece. And then we would make a piece out of it. So it really was just kind of like this creative outlet where we were just kind of throwing things at the wall. And we had another job and we were drop shipping the art. So it was just like, hey, you know, we didn't touch any of the money at all in the beginning because it was just like kind of just like lunchbox money where it was just like, hey, the money's coming in, it comes in, it doesn't. It wasn't until we started doing paid acquisition where then we started kind of creating and marketing with a purpose and started looking deeper into the data. But in the beginning, complete side hustle, had no clue this would be like my calling in life or my first calling, I would say. And it just was purely out of passion and it was just fun.
So you've been in business for a little less than 2 years. You've mentioned that when you started doing paid acquisition, that your marketing kind of went in the full-fledged forward mode. But if you look back at the last 2 years, has your marketing changed at all? We'll talk about email today. We'll talk about social media. We'll talk about content today. But if you look back 2 years ago to what you were doing from a marketing perspective, whether paid or otherwise, to what you're doing now, how significantly has it changed? And if it has, how so?
I mean, if anybody answers that question and they says it hasn't changed, then they wouldn't be on this podcast. Or I would be mad at you if you have them on the podcast because they would be losing.
You haven't listened to my podcast, have you?
I listened to one episode.
That was the best one.
It was. Really, things change so fast. Looking back, like imagine if this was 4 years ago on Facebook, the gold era, everything changed so quick. I mean, in the beginning, so it started, this is ironic because you're an email guy. So in the beginning, it was only Facebook, not even Instagram. And then it went to Facebook and Instagram. And I would say for the first 8 months, it was only Facebook and Instagram. We did not touch our email list until we did $3 million in top line revenue. So think about this. I mean, February 2017, we didn't even know what ROAS, return on ad spend, was for Facebook. I mean, we were literally newbies. And like we had this email list and I was like, very hesitant to hit it because I didn't want to like annoy people. It was crazy. So it was Facebook, then it was Facebook and Instagram. Then we brought in email and then we started diving really deep and we started bringing Google and started doing native with Outbrain and Taboola, started doing Bing. The biggest thing throughout has always been an influencer on Instagram. So that's been throughout. And then looking at email, I would say over the last, you know, 9 months, we've taken a dramatic shift into optimizing that and really understanding the value of that and saying, hey, you know, X percent of our revenue is email, you know, let's go higher and higher and higher under the notion that obviously you're not paying for acquisition. So I think email has really started to rise for us. I see it. The metrics don't lie there. And then things like Facebook has gotten much harder. Instagram has gotten harder. So it's really a constant search to find, just to find that white space in a distribution channel that you can get good return.
So let's go down the email path for a few minutes here. So, you know, 9 months ago, you start putting a little more into the email. You're starting to see some benefits from it. Current day, how often are you guys sending promotional emails? And then the follow-up to that is, are you utilizing any sort of automated emails that you're comfortable talking about?
Yep. So I'd say we're doing 3 emails a week, 3, maybe 4. And just to kind of give you the maturation, in the beginning, it was just one of two things, either a new piece or a discount. So it was all, I mean, for lack of better terms, it was all DR. There was no top of the funnel. There was no brand. There was all buy the shit, save money, buy the shit. And now we've integrated in tons of different storytelling elements, you know, from a welcome series as the biggest thing. We have customizable messaging on the back end once you get your thank you email. Stuff like card abandonment series, we've tailored it to be specific to what you left. So it's like if you left the Muhammad Ali piece in your cart, you're going to get messaging tailored towards the Muhammad Ali IP. And yeah, man, I really think it's testing all different not DR stuff to find ways to build more rapport with your customer. I mean, we started talking about my backstory, Jeff's backstory, the partnership with Gary, the partnership with Scooter, social proofing, the story behind the piece, you know, why we do what we do, you know, what's coming down the pipeline. Here's our web series. Here's our podcast. So I think it's really about being creative and figuring out ways to keep people engaged where it's, you know, kind of like value, 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 buy this, not buy this, buy this, buy this, buy this, buy this. So I think email has been really good in helping us get customers more engaged with the brands in a very soft, non-intrusive touch point.
That's really cool. I think that's always a challenge with storytelling in, I don't want to say just email, but email is kind of the conversation we're having right now. So we'll use it as the example because, you know, people are seeing things on their phones. I think we've had a conversation in the past about image heavy type emails being quick read, scannable, let people kind of digest the content. I don't know if you knew this about me. I used to sell art. I used to travel around the US and sell art that was, you know, limited edition and things like that.
Craig, why did you not tell me that? You did not tell me more. Tell me more.
I don't think you asked.
Tell me more. How would I know you sold art? Tell me more.
So I worked for this company called The Rock Art Show, which was, this is my foray for my transition into from radio broadcasting into marketing. So it was a startup radio promotions company based in Philadelphia. They put on radio promotion. So it was an art show, but the artwork was done by classic rock musicians. So if you think of Jimi Hendrix or, you know, John Entwistle from The Who or Paul McCartney or whatever it might be, Jerry Garcia, limited edition prints. And we would package these and sell them to radio stations and the radio station would brand them. And then we would get a cut of the sales and part of the proceeds and things like that. The big thing there, I mean, you can have, so you talk about price points, huge issue for us as well. We had to start carrying very low priced, non-limited edition things to kind of fit that market. Mm-hmm. But storytelling is what sold pieces, right? So we had little cards on each thing that we displayed that kind of had the backstory, but you would have to talk to someone and tell them the backstory of all these different images and paintings and things like that. And that's tough to do in a email medium. It's doable, but it's tough to do in an email medium because you want to keep it more image heavy for the most people now, but it's hard to tell stories in images. So it was cool. We traveled, like I said, we traveled all around. This is becoming a podcast about me now, but we can talk about this offline, but it's a really cool challenge that you guys have or trying to overcome that with, you know, targeting people based on what they left in the cart. You know, we had pictures of Muhammad Ali in the show as well, you know, knocking out Sonny Liston or whatever. And you know, being able to tell a story behind that is something that you might be able to put in those card abandonment emails, just to give you some ideas now. But we can talk about this offline again. Like how I digress this back to you, Mark. Are you guys doing a segmentation with your promotional emails now, or is it just kind of to the whole list?
So I would say right now we're probably about 3-4 weeks into really diving into just segmenting our customers as far as, you know, VIP customers, who's bought recent, how many, what collection they came from. So I think all of it's obviously specific to the types of businesses, outside of recency, frequency, and the amount they've spent. Everything is just based on the prior pieces. A big thing that we've done that we've had a lot of success in is, you know, you can do this with any product, any collection, is really rounding out the series. So if you have a series of, you know, three pieces and someone's bought two, there's no reason why, you know, through email, since you already own the customer and then there's no cost to acquire the customer, you say, hey, you know, would you like the third piece to complete the collection? And then, you know, here's an image of all the three pieces together, and you can give them, you know, a limited time, one-time discount. We've seen amazing success in that. That's something that we put together recently. As far as segmentation, I would say that we're getting a little bit more granular, but we're nowhere near like the super ninja level. Like, we don't have it segmented by, you know, where they're based outside of, you know, what country they're in. I'm sure we can get way more granular than that. It's really based on buying habits. That's as granular as we get. It's based on buying habits.
So with a move away from promotion to promotion, you know, storytelling, brand building, things like that, have you noticed a dip in conversions off those emails as the first part of that question? And if so, it doesn't matter to you because you're doing more with those emails than just saying, hey, try to buy something. You're trying to build and establish and further establish brand credibility and build kind of this overall brand. So part one, do you see a lack of or fewer conversions on the non-promotional emails? And then do you care? Does that matter to you guys?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's like a $1 billion question / answer. For us, how we look at our business, not only in email, but from my overall business, is I never look at, you know, one paid distribution channel. I never look at it isolated. I look at the whole entire picture because I truly think that it's impossible to understand multi-touch attribution. So, like, you know, our ROAS on Snapchat could be terrible, but it could be a really good first touch point that's helping feed the third, fourth, fifth touch point. So for me, are we getting as many conversions on the value-driven emails? Definitely not. But we look at other indicators like, you know, click-through, are people reading, are people opening it? And as long as they're reading it and opening it, and at the end of, you know, the month, the KPIs tell us the churn rate isn't down and stuff like that, as long as we're moving in the right direction, I'm always going to err on, you know, building more story, more brands, and getting more people really into the tribe, because getting the people into the tribe is where you make the big money. So don't really care about conversions in those emails. I care about what is the overall metrics for the month. Are we moving forward? And then are people reading it? And that's about it.
It's a good way to look at it. How about just a real quick breakdown of your email team? So how many guys or females, ladies, do you have dedicated to email? And do they have their hands in other things as well? Because you've been around for less than 2 years. I'm assuming you don't have, you know, 1,000 employees working under you. So how's your email team kind of structured these days?
It's we have a copywriter and an email guy that work on our brand and a couple other brands. It's definitely something that we'll end up bringing in-house for someone to own it. But for now, we're just slowly optimizing everything as we go. And they understand the brand voice. So right now it's working. So yeah, so we have one person that's doing the actual emails, one person that's a copywriter, and then obviously our internal PM is checking everything and making sure that it's aligned with our product drops and stuff like that. But it's just copywriter, email guy, and they're working on us and a couple other accounts.
So you have a fair number of automated messages sending. You don't have a huge team focused on executing more and more emails. You're working on segmentation, you said, in-house. How are you managing to get automated messages implemented with fewer resources?
Apps. I mean, we're hitting people on Facebook Messenger. We're hitting people on text. The email platform that we use, obviously, also you can just program auto messages through there. So it's really just apps. We don't like to be too heavy on bombing people on one platform. I think that we are pretty strategic in how we utilize, I would say, those three: text, Facebook Messenger, and email, where it's we're hitting you from every single angle. It's not just like, you know, hey, he's hitting me on text, you know, 10 times this week. I'd say email is the one that's most, has the lowest barrier of like acceptability. So it's like people accept email. So we're doing that 3 or 4 times a week. And then we couple it with Messenger and text, which is much less frequent. But yeah, it's all through, you know, apps and then our native email platform that we use.
It's cool. I think the one thing about email, which I always tell people, it's a marketing channel that people opt into receiving promotional messages. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean you have to promote every time, but it's the one where they said, yeah, here's my email address, send me some stuff. And I think that that holds a lot of power to me as far as conversions go. So how about before we shift over, because I want to touch on social, which is kind of how you guys started the business and everything, and figure out how that integrates with everything. How about the one thing that any surprising findings with your email program, either on the positive side or negative side? So it could be, hey, we did this thing and doing a lot better than we thought, or we did this thing that everyone told us we should do and it's really bombing for us. Is there anything that jumps off the page to you?
A couple things. A, you're a smart man. You told me about that birthday email. We've been doing that. That's done very well. And I think not surprising to me, but it's so crazy to think people really love those discounts, man. I mean, when you discount, it's a fast path to disaster. So you have to be very careful in how often you do them. But I mean, you wouldn't believe our delta in revenue from when we don't discount to when we do. So just being very careful about, you know, we actually eliminate our discount days from our overall, not obviously top line revenue from email for the month, but like from an overall metric standpoint, from like an open rate and stuff like that. We actually eliminate the discount days because it's just such an abnormal day where there's no skill to it. It's just like, here's the discount. And it's like this group of rabid humans just waiting for it. So I've been surprised. Again, this is all fairly new for me, you know, 2 years. I've been surprised to see how impactful discount is on emails.
You guys have price points kind of all over the place, right? So you if someone wants to find something at certain price points, for the most part, they can do so. Do you think that discounting thing where people are jumping on that, do you think it's a matter of price points for the piece they want? Or do you think it's just consumers have been trained to wait for discounts?
I think they're just trained. I mean, you know, my mom, who's, I don't know, like probably 60, she knows to put something in the cart and leave because she knows she's going to get an escalating discount. And she's so funny. She'll get the email and it'll be like 10% off, you know, ends in 24 hours. And like when I was with her for Black Friday, it's my favorite time because obviously Black Friday is huge for us. I stay home with my family and I leave like the Shopify cha-chings on. So they celebrate with me. It's like a fun game. And she'll get like the 10% discount. She'll be like, nope, I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait one more day. I'm going to wait 2 more days. And then she'll get like 15%. She'll be like, Mark, do you think 20% is going to come? It's so funny. So I think the customer is just getting a lot smarter. So they wait, you know, but for us, you know, we have certain strategies in place to help incentivize and push people to buy sooner than later, or else, you know, we'd have no sales on the days that we're not discounting. So
can you share those strategies or is that proprietary for you? I mean, you can say no, but it's my job to ask.
I mean, the one most obvious one, which we actually don't even use for an array of different reasons, is just making product, you know, available for a limited time or limited units. I think scarcity and fear of loss are two very real things in this world. Mm-hmm. If there's a girl that's leaving to go to Spain tomorrow morning, from now until tomorrow morning, you're going to be a very nice guy to her. That's just what it is. So, I mean, if you give someone a time limit, they're going to do what they need to do in that time limit. I've always thought that in anything in life. So
I would agree with that. Very cool. Let's make that shift over to social because you guys launched, for the most part, you guys launched on social and it's a major component of your strategy. I'm going to combine social and content marketing because they kind of go hand in hand here. I'm going to assume just based on the way you were speaking before that social is an engagement channel that can drive sales. So engagement first and sales come second. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. So when you mean social, I'm thinking influencer, and we always looked at influencer as top of the funnel awareness. And we've since shifted to put standards in place to look at it as a paid channel, but I still look at it as top of the funnel. I mean, it's just so inexpensive. You know, you get someone with 1 million followers, you pay X. If you compare you know, if you compare those metrics to any other channel, it's going to win. And then you're also getting followers, you're getting content, you're getting social proofing. I mean, you're getting so much. So social media and influencer for me is the biggest thing right now in the game. And it's, if you're not doing that, I just don't see how you're not scaling quick.
How do you manage your relationship with influencers? Do you use an agency to find them? Do you guys find them yourselves? Can you walk us through that process a little bit?
It all goes down to the DM, and it's all been me. And I'm actually bringing someone on right now to manage it. But you have to look at a lot of things where, you know, kind of what I said before, when you get, you know, someone posts, you can't look at it from a singular touch point. It's not a post. It's a, that post can get you sales. That post can get you followers. That post is going to give you a unique piece of content that can be repurposed on other platforms. That post is going to live forever. So you have to really look at everything as, what is all of the types of value propositions it's going to bring to the table? And that's why I think why I've actually dealt with influencers firsthand, because I just gave you four different pockets on how it's advantageous. But a fifth pocket is, if I'm dealing with them, then that's not my relationship. I can now biz dev that. I can now find other ways to maximize that relationship. So if you're an owner of a company, I think it would be naive to think that like you shouldn't have those relationships with the people that are basically providing you the best ROI on, in some sense of the word, paid acquisition. So it's just been, it's been very advantageous for us that like I'm a relationship guy. Like that's like my thing anyway. So I've dealt with them firsthand.
When you talk about paying for influencers, obviously they're not doing it for free, right? So are you guys figuring out like a monetary thing before? Do you guys have a dashboard you look at? Without getting into the nitty gritty, because every type of influencer is going to have probably different payment options and payment structures. But from the most part, what do you guys look at from compensation standpoint? Like what's kind of your bread and butter?
Everything is either product or paid. And then you just dissect it based on what, you know, what does their engagement look like, their followers, what type of followers, what their demo is. And then there's a million ways you can cut it. They can put it in story, they can post it, you know, they could do a coupon code, they can do a UTM tracking for swipe up, they can do a link in bio. I mean, there's millions of ways you can do it. But ultimately it's, you know, if you have a really good product, that conversation is a lot easier. And I think we have the best product in the market. So that's made my job a lot easier. And there's so many influencers out there, man. It's crazy. It's endless. So if somebody's not responding how you like, or they're charging too much, on to the next one.
You guys do a lot of content. So you have a video series on your website, which people can go check out. You guys have a videographer around all the time. Mm-hmm. What's your stance on content and content marketing? Why isn't it so important for you guys?
This whole entire world and every single business is just one big story. And you have to look at story as, you know, there's millions of ways to consume a story, whether it be, you know, by words on paper, whether it be by audio, whether it be by video. And if you invest in content, I mean, you can repurpose that content. You know, you can transcript it into words. You can take the video and put it into a podcast. I mean, there's a million different ways that you can do it. So for us, it's just, it makes the most sense, because it's just creating content is how you tell a story. There's no other way to really put it. I mean, our brand and my personal brand, it's just one big story. So I think when it's all said and done in the next 5 years, I think brand and story is the only thing that's going to be relevant.
And for a company who might be listening, whether they're a business owner or marketing director, whoever it might be, if they're currently, we'll assume they're on social, the level of engagement is probably a different story. But if they're looking at it and say, I know I need help here on my social channel, it's either we need more content, we need to work with influencers, we need to do better storytelling. They want to kind of drive that in a meaningful way. What's your one piece of advice you would give the company that wants to capitalize upon social media in the most meaningful way possible?
Well, first things first is invest in content. You need really good content. You know, really good content can find its way to go viral just by random chance. That's possible. So first things first is you have to invest in good content. And you have to know the type of content you're looking to provide for your end consumer. What type of emotion are you trying to get out of the customer? Do you care about aesthetic? What type of message? I can go on and on, all different things, but figure out the type of content, produce that content at scale. And I think the second most important thing is to find ways to get eyes on it, whether that be influencers, whether that be other paid channels, whether that be collaborations, whether that be bartering. create great content, and then find ways to get it to as many people as possible, as cheap as possible.
So let's talk about, you mentioned bartering there. Have you guys found that to be a successful tactic for you? Because I think that's one thing where a lot of companies have the opportunity to do so, and they probably don't even think about it because they assume most people, speak about influencers specifically, but most people get paid in money, right? But it's one of these things where we hear a lot about influencers that they barter one thing for another. Have you guys found that to be a successful tactic for you?
Greg, my friends call me Barter Simpson.
It's been a
great tactic. Yeah, of course. You have a great product. Why not always lead with product first? Yeah, like I said, it is a big sea out there of influencers, so you should always be leading with product and aggressively try to push product before cash. And you know, if they want cash and you want it bad enough, you'll pay. If not, like I said before, on to the next one. But yeah, always lead with product.
Very cool. You guys recently launched a Gary Vee collection. You guys have been in business for less than 2 years. How'd you guys get synced up, grown to the point you have, and then get synced up with Gary Vee? And what did that creative process look like? Was it a side-by-side, back-and-forth designs, or was it kind of you leading the charge or him leading the charge? Can you walk us through that? Because I think that's a cool story.
Yeah. So to give you a quick couple-minute backdrop on Gary, long story short, Vayner Sports needed a rebrand. They approached my business partner, Cole. Cole did the rebrand. They asked how much. He said, nothing, don't worry about it. 6 months later, my guy at Vayner, I emailed him, super savage email saying, hey, what's up? Here's our revenue the last 6 months. We're disciples of Gary. We'd love to meet him. He sent that to Gary, who then sent me a screenshot of Gary saying, let's meet. We met for 15 minutes later that week. It went great. Flew to New York the next week. Really vibed with him. He wanted to get involved. At that same time, we were getting involved with Scooter. Side to side, we negotiated it. They both signed on. And then from a collaboration standpoint, it was just so authentic. It was as simple as him just giving us his favorite quotes and then Jeff doing what he does. I think he did 10 pieces. I think literally Jeff sent 10, maybe 11, and he just said yes to every single one. So it was, Gary's a really firm believer in doubling down your strengths and outsourcing your weaknesses and empowering people that are the best at what they do to do what they do. So he really gave Jeff the quotes, Jeff whipped up the designs, and then it was just done from there.
Let's talk about that. What would you say your one strength and then one weakness as a whole would be?
Me as a human?
No, you just said doubling down on your strengths and outsourcing your weaknesses. So if you look at your brand Iconic and say, you know, as a company, where are we most strong and where are we the weakest? What would you say those two things would be?
I would say strength is brand cachet and social proofing and who we have supporting it and the momentum that has come with that. And I'd say weakness, I wouldn't peg one, but I would just say, we're definitely gradually understanding our customer to a much more granular level, understanding like interest groups, where they're from, how old they are. Ultimately understanding who your customer profile is going to help you market better because you're going to position all of your content, all of your messaging to talk to that person. So I'd say understanding the customer better. And then just, you know, I've never scaled a company this fast or this big. So it's really just the understanding everything that goes along with scale from an organization standpoint, from a human standpoint, from making sure nothing falls through the cracks. So I would just say scaling efficiently and then understanding the customer best or the weaknesses.
Very cool. If you had to give one piece of advice to a company looking to scale their business or accelerate their marketing programs. You said you've had success in the business world before. You said you've never grown one quite this fast. What would your piece of advice be to kind of pour gas in the fire, accelerate the marketing program?
I would kind of go back to what I said before with double down on your strengths and outsource your weaknesses. It's, I think too many people offer quote unquote social media and think it's an easy thing. Like I'm actually sitting in a room right now with a business partner of mine, one of my best friends, very, very intelligent in a lot of things. He sucks at social media. And no matter how much he tried to do social media, he would never be good at it because that's just not what he's good at. So I think it's if you're trying to scale in anywhere, let alone that pocket, it's understanding somebody that really knows that pocket. It's very weird, Greg, that you can find someone that is not intelligent and 18 years old, and he could be in the top 1% in understanding how to scale social, which for someone of your intelligence, which I would assume is probably your listeners, it's very hard to grasp, but it's a fact. I mean, I literally know 16-year-old kids that are top 0.01% in social media. So it's really just, I think it's getting the right people in the seat to drive those things.
That's a great piece of advice. I love it.
Thank you.
You guys are opening up, I saw it on Instagram, you guys are opening up a brick and mortar store.
Hey.
Why did you decide to open a brick and mortar? And then the follow-up is, how did you decide where to open it? So city-wise.
By chance and by chance.
Solid business reasoning.
Yep. Funny story. So I didn't even want to do it, to be honest with you. Jeff will listen to this. He'll be mad. Long story short, Jeff introduced his best friend to a girl, and that girl's father is a really big retail guy in Vegas. And he's, you know, bought a lot of real estate in the Arts District in Vegas. Loves art, loves Jeff. Ironically enough, it was a guy that I was trying to get to for years on years. And then one day Jeff just kind of mentioned this guy to me, and I was just like, you idiot, do you know who this guy is? We met, he liked it, we cut a deal, and we're opening anytime soon. It's a really good testing ground. Good from a storytelling perspective, you know, talking to customers as opposed to on the phone or through the internet. You're talking to them in person, you're seeing what they look like, you can ask them more questions. And it's just like the ultimate testing ground. We're looking at it, and it's going to be fun. There's a lot of cool installations in there. We're going to be able to do events, and it's in Vegas. It gives us another reason to go to Vegas. That should be fun.
Get your employees to understand the story behind every single image or every single piece of art you have in there.
For sure.
Well, congrats. That's exciting. Do you guys have a soft launch date in mind, or is that still under wraps, still in progress?
That phone call is today at 4:30.
Okay.
So I would say anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks.
Very cool. Before we get to just a couple minutes of some more game show stuff, if you had to say you wanted to achieve two things with email this year and two things with on social this year, so we'll lump social slash content in there this year. What would you say kind of the top things in each bucket would be?
Email is just grow our good engaged email list as fast as possible, which obviously means minimizing the churn. And then obviously optimizing as much revenue out of our email channel. So I would say just growing the list as much as possible, growing the revenue as much as possible. And then from a social and a content standpoint, I would say I'll do one for each. From a content standpoint, it's continuing to create elevating content. You know, that sounds simple, but you know, one way that we differentiate ourselves from our competitors is we're really investing in beautiful, you know, storytelling through video. So I would say continue to push the envelope and stay ahead of the pack by creating beautiful content. And then from a social perspective, you know, we're pretty tight on looking at our growth. It's been pretty steady over the years. You know, a goal would be to maintain that same growth speed or get faster. And we're going to be doing some things in the near future to kind of scale that faster. So grow faster and keep staying ahead of the curve through great storytelling.
Awesome. Mark, what did I neglect to ask you today that you feel would be important for the listeners to know? If I did.
I think just a big thing that I always tell to everybody in all my podcasts and interviews is, you know, I'm 33 years old. You know, I was in deep credit card debt, you know, 3-4 years ago. In my young 20s, I was an absolute degenerate idiot, drinking 30 beers a night, didn't read books. You know, it can all change at any moment. You know, it's all inside your minds. And the big thing that I always like to tell people to take away from me is the importance of reading and learning. I think you can attest for the people that are listening now. I actually met Greg. I spoke at a conference, an e-commerce conference in Quebec. I saw the people that were speaking. Obviously, email was an initiative of ours. I saw you were speaking. I immediately became interested. I looked at your picture. I saw you. I introduced myself. And Greg, what did we do the whole weekend, man? We chopped it up.
Yeah, man.
I learned as much as I could off you. You ask me every question. I ask you every question. We talk back and forth. You know, knowledge and skills are going to take you the furthest in life. So always be learning. It's so crazy. See, I just quoted my own piece. Always be learning. You know, if you're a guy that's running email and you're not listening to this podcast, then you're an idiot. Straight up. Yeah, that would be the one thing that we didn't talk about. Is just my overall message to people watching is just continue to learn.
I would agree with the podcast point. I'm going to chop that up and use it as a promo from now on.
You can do it. You can chop it up however you want. I'm with it. Let's go.
Awesome. Mark, we'll have contact info in the episode description for Iconic and for you. But if people want to reach out, what's the best way for them to get a hold of either you, the brand? You know, just kind of lay out the contact info if you could.
Yeah, it's Mark Brazil, Mark with a K, Brazil with a Z, Iconic, Iconic. on Instagram, Facebook, iconic.com, iconic on YouTube. I'd really, for people that found this value-driven / entertaining, we have a web series called Behind the Hustle on YouTube. I think that if you watched it, you'd really love it. So check that out on YouTube, and that's about it.
It's a good series. I splurged it the last couple of days. So
let's go.
It's a good job. Mark, any questions for me today?
Any questions for you? I don't know. We got to hang out soon.
We do.
You speaking at any conferences soon?
I'm not speaking, but I'm going to be at IRCE in the June.
Is that in Vegas?
Chicago. I'm trying to get out to LA.
Well, you let me know whenever you're in Vegas because I'm going there often now. And yeah, dude, whenever you're in LA, let me know. Come by the office.
Will do. Mark, I know you have a meeting. Do you have a couple minutes to stick around or no?
I just texted him that I'm going to be 3 to 5 minutes. And he said, no worries, homie. Take your time. So let's go.
Awesome. Let's do some questions here. What's your favorite LA area restaurant?
Faith and Flower. I live next door to it. It's got the best drink in the world. It's called Milk Punch.
Very cool. What's your favorite thing about what you do?
I always define success as doing what I want with who I want, when I want. I'm in a room right now with my best friend, my business partner, my other best friend. I do what I want, when I want, with who I want, and there's zero chance that's ever changing. So the best part is just doing whatever the hell I want, whenever I want.
That's awesome. How about the most unusual job you've ever had?
I sold Cutco knives. It was one of my first jobs. I sold energy efficient lighting and window coating door to door from Compton to Beverly Hills when I was 22. I worked at Sports Authority for 6 days, but then I checked the score of the Jets game while at the cashier. They told me I couldn't look at my phone. I told them off, and then I got fired. I don't know if I could curse. Sorry about that.
I can edit anything out. Don't worry about it.
Cool.
So little known fact about me as well, I also used to do door-to-door.
Door-to-door is good.
We're like someone can this. Dude, extremely helpful. Extremely helpful. Not always the most fun, but helpful from a talking and convincing standpoint.
Yeah, that was pretty brutal, but it was a good part of my life. It was the dirt.
Is brunch overrated?
Is brunch overrated? No, because I don't eat breakfast, so usually it is brunch. That's my first meal of my day, so I love brunch.
I feel like we just broke up. What's your go-to pizza topping?
My go-to pizza topping, probably barbecue chicken pizza, maybe a little pepperoni, meatball.
Okay.
All the meats.
All the meats. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
I've probably had under 10 hot dogs my whole entire life. I'm not a hot dog guy, so I don't even know how to answer that. I would say no, it's not a sandwich. I look at sandwiches as like subs or heroes, like a chicken parmesan sandwich or a Italian hero, something like that. So no, I would say it's not a sandwich.
That's at East Coast and you're coming out. Do you say niche or niche?
Niche.
All right. Go-to karaoke song. What do you sing in the night?
It used to be Michael Jackson, but then I watched his documentary and now I hope he rots in hell. And I don't want you to blurp that out, Greg.
I'll leave it at that. We'll talk offline about this. So what would you choose then? You gotta pick a new song.
I really like, there are these two Canadian rappers under Drake's label. It's like slow rap. It's called, his name is Roy Woods and Magic Jordan. They're two very random ones, but if anybody likes like R. Kelly or like old R&B, like Usher stuff, it's a little different, but check out Roy Woods and Magic Jordan. I like them a lot.
Very cool. And last one for you, man. Best book you've read in the past year?
Best book I've read is my last book I read, The 5 a.m. Club. And anybody that follows me and wants to live the savage life of waking up at 5 a.m., follow me on Instagram. And every morning I post podcasts I listen to. I wake up before 5 a.m. every day.
Do you need an alarm to get up now?
I do. I have two alarms just because I post and timestamp my podcasts on my Instagram stories. So now if I'm like not doing it by 5:25, I'm actually getting messages from people like, where are you? So I definitely need multiple alarms.
That's cool. It makes you accountable.
Accountability is one of the most important things in life, my man.
I would agree. I absolutely agree. Accountability, dependability, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Mark Brazil, co-founder of Iconic. Be sure to check him out. Thanks for your time, Mark. To those listening, especially our listener of the week, Jerry from Atlanta. If you want to be a listener of the week, let me know you've tuned in. And if you're interested in telling your e-commerce or email marketing story, I'd love to hear from you as well. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Until next time, have a great day and be kind to one another.